Welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program's broadcast, particularly the local traditional owners, the Jagera, Yagera, Turrbal and Yugurupul peoples, the Yugambeh, Mananjali, Kombamiri, Nunnakal, Quandamooka peoples. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Today's discussion that will be taking place, I've got three people joining me to talk about Anzac Day, but the role of Anzac Day, the role that we have as First Nations people and mainstream Australians, settler society, the role of Anzac Day and recognising Aboriginal people in recognising about the role of Aboriginal people that we've played. But also, I suppose, I would like to reinforce or bring to the discussion the recognition of the first people who fought and died for this country, and that is the Frontier Wars. So to talk about that, I've got live in the studio, Meredith Walker joins me. Meredith, how are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Very good. When did you get an interest in engaging with Aboriginal people, First Nations people is my preferred term, but you use whatever term you prefer, if you're comfortable with Aboriginal right. or Indigenous or whatever.
Well, I didn't meet anybody till I was in my early 20s, but I was always very interested from a young child, looking at photographs in the Walkabout magazine and seeing that people my age were in household service, photographs of young women and also, of course, I'd seen very large middens along the coast at Anglesey in Victoria and said, well, what are all those shells? And people said, well, they're eaten. I said, but you can't eat that many. You couldn't eat that many.
That's a big meal.
Yes. So I've always been curious and, yes, but in the last few years I've been very conscious of the fact that I grew up not being told the truth about the early settler history and feeling that I had to redress the situation and help the 97% of the population who are not Indigenous know as well.
All right. We'll come back to that. I've got Heather Johnston joining me via telephone. Heather, welcome to the program. How are you? Dr. Heather Johnston, I should add. How are you today?
I'm fine, thanks, Tiger.
It's great to have you join us with this for this discussion. And you're quite familiar with Meredith. You do some work together.
Oh yes, we're partners in crime.
Partners in crime. That's good. That's good. That's why I feel quite comfortable with you ladies talking to you and having you on the program. We're all partners in crime. That's great. It's fantastic. Tell us, when did you develop an interest and start to engage in this sort of business with First Nations people, social justice?
Well, I've always been interested in social justice or had a heart, I suppose, for disadvantaged people. Never had much to do with Aboriginal people until I cared in the 90s, early 90s. I was looking after had some various children in my household, and one of them was an Aboriginal child, and he sort of stayed on informally for some years, and then through the family law court. So, he's still, you know, as part of my family, my son, and so that gave me an interest, I suppose. And then my husband died 10 years ago, and I returned to Budrum, where I was born and brought up, and since I've been here. And I've got this sort of bit of bush, and my sister has been very involved in Indigenous issues for longer than I have, and she suggested, and I agreed that the land should be used by the Aboriginal people if they wanted to, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that really over 10 years we've had, developed quite an intense a close connection with the local Indigenous people in relation to this local land.
All right. Well, we've also got First Nations man Les Muckin joining us on the telephone for the first stage of the discussion. Les, welcome to the program. How are you, brother?
Yeah, good, brother. Thank you very much for inviting me on your show. Hello to everybody. Love you heaps.
It's certainly good to add some more colour to the program, Les. I mean, I'm sitting here as the only black fella, you know. But
you took the words right out of my mouth.
It would be embarrassing just to have white people talking.
Oh, no, it's fine, don't worry. But when, I think it was you, Heather, that mentioned Les was present on the day last, was it Friday?
Yeah, that's right.
And I thought, well, good, it'd be good to have Les join us for the discussion in the early stages of this discussion anyway. Now, let's talk about Friday. Friday, you held a remembrance service, was it?
It's an Anzac Day reflection.
Right.
Particularly remembering the Forgotten War, what we call the Forgotten War, which is the frontier, what you call the Frontier Wars.
Right.
Do you want me to tell you the backstory?
Yes, please. But let me first just say, I meant to ask Les, tell us your mob and your country, Les, please. Sorry, apologies for that. I'd like to have First Nations people introduce themselves and tell us their mob, their country.
Yeah, well, my forefathers, my bloodline goes to the Cubby Cubby mob. Hello to all the Cubby Cubby mob. And also on my mother's side is the Borogubba people, from Biri, Yuru and Bindle up in North Queensland there near Townsville and there.
That's all my old grandfather's mob. Old Sam Watson's mob. Yep, that's me mob.
Yeah, that's him. That's him, brother.
Same mob.
Yeah.
All right. And you're talking to me from where? Where are you based?
Oh, I forgot to say it too, brother. The other descendants, when the Kanakas were brought in, my grandfathers were South Sea Islanders too.
That's all right.
Well, g'day to them all too.
It's part of the blackbirding slavery business that took place.
That's it, brother.
Yeah,
that's it.
Mm. All right. And, Heather, if you'd tell us just how you got to, first up, you've got the greenhouse at Lindsay Road in Budrum, and you've got a little site there, a memorial there. But there's a bit of a story before you got to that point. Tell us, where to start.
I'll just tell you how we got to this sort of Anzac Day thing. My father fought in the Middle East, and Tobruk, and my father and his sister, were in New Guinea in the Second World War. My brother was called up for national service in Vietnam times. But my earlier ancestors were first settlers on the Darling Downs in 1840, which was the site of a rapid and brutal dispossession of the first people. My ancestors were also early settlers in Tenderfield. And on Anzac Day, I really wish to respectfully remember all my family's wars and the people they fought with, including the Aboriginal service people overseas, the people they fought against, which was German, Japanese and the local, and the Australian First People, and the local civilians and innocent bystanders. And I want to pray for the healing of the land in all those places where all those wars happened. And my son says that there's no place for an old 60s anti-war hippie on Anzac Day, but I think that's a pity.
There is a place. There's a place for all of us. It doesn't matter where we come from, and that's really good that you're there.
It was thought, envisaged in the beginning as an inclusive remembrance, and I think that all Australia's wars should be respectfully remembered. So that's my perspective. I live at Budrum on some family land, which includes some bush, which my brother, sister and I had made a nature refuge. And the little bit that's mine, which includes the greenhouse, is now in a public charity, which is social justice thing, but with a particular interest in environmental conservation and Indigenous reconciliation. And I suppose I started off as a sort of conservation, environmental conservation, greeny type person. But over more recent years, I have come to the conclusion that caring for land properly requires acknowledgement of the history of that land, the things that happened there. So I've been researching, you know, the history of Bartram and things like that, and acknowledging the things that happened in the past, because the history is sort of still inherent in the land in some way. So at the greenhouse, since we have various programs there which are really run under the auspices of the Anglican Church, just a group of sort of volunteers, friends, doing their own thing, you know. And since 2009, we've had annual gatherings where the Indigenous people, the local Indigenous people, have come and planted trees for people who've died during the year. So the family gathers each year. They'll come back and remember the people, a bit of, you know, sorry business. And we have, you know, on those occasions, we've told stories and said sorries and shared the reconciliation journey. And in the last 2 years, we've had gatherings of this sort on Anzac Day, really just, well, last year it was a group of white people with one Aboriginal fella really just reading out some historical accounts of the frontier wars, and we laid some reeds. And then this year we thought, oh, we'd do something similar, but it was much bigger. So we invited, you know, all the local Indigenous people, and you know, more than 100 people came. We just invited white fellows by word of mouth. So there was a group of sympathetic non-Indigenous people, but more than 50, might have been 60 Aboriginal people. And we asked them to tell stories of the local dispossession and stories from other places. And, oh, you know, we laid wreaths, and we'd made a new track in the bush for the elders, where, you know, planted a couple of trees and had a sitting place and a bench. And it was a very good occasion, really very nice vibe. So that's what it was. That's what happened.
Well, that's what struck my interest. Meredith walked in the studio here last week and had a yarn with one of my staff, and she said, oh, I met this lovely lady, and she's doing this and doing that and involved. And I just thought, there's lots of mainstream Australians around that want to do things, and that should hear of people like yourselves, where yous are there educating some of your own mob, because a lot of us black fellas have been doing it for a long, 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 long time, educating white fellas. And there's nothing more encouraging for me to meet people like yourselves who's out there taking responsibility to try to educate some of your own mob. And I just think it's fantastic. So that's how come I've called you up and got you on the station, got you on the program.
Thank you.
So, well, must have been a nice surprise to have so many people. Meredith, how did you feel when you saw such a big gathering, and then a good representation of First Nations people present as well?
Oh, well, thrilled, really, and greatly appreciated that the people we'd invited. You know, often when you invite people, they say, oh, yes, we'll come along, and you never quite know whether they'll turn up. But people were there in droves, and their whole families, lots of children, children sitting very respectfully and listening to the stories. And it was very good. And when people arrived, we gave them a rubber red, yellow and black bracelet that said Remembering the Frontier Wars, because we wanted people to remember the occasion and to sort of get into the feeling of it fairly quickly. And it was very good. And a lot of people turned up whom we didn't know.
Yeah.
And so that was very exciting. They'd come from some distance, some of them. And, it was excellent. And, of course, it had a slightly informal quality. Things didn't go exactly the way we'd planned. And that had its own benefits. People felt free to.
Really,
yes, no, it was lovely. And You know, I do think that sort of serendipitous nature of events is very good. Mm. And, yeah, and people feeling pleased, I think. And I think also people leaving saying, well, other people could do this. And
Great.
Other people could. Mm. And that's what we feel, that, and the honour of being on your program is that maybe people will think up other ways. It's
the stone in the river, the ripple effect.
And it's not obvious where remembering the frontier conflict should be when you look at all the days in which Indigenous people are celebrated and their heritage is celebrated. There's not an obvious place, but we started, I think, at the spot where these conflicts should be recognised as a war and not just said, oh, it wasn't really like that. You know, it does need to be recognised. These things do need to be recognised as war. And as Henry Reynolds said, if it wasn't war, it was mass murder.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's where we've started. Next year we might do something different.
All right. Well, there's a couple of issues. One is the recognition of the role of black diggers in conflicts.
Yes.
And then the other issue is taking it the next step further, and I think it was you, Heather. How did you word it, Heather? Recognising the first people that have that have fallen in fighting for this country or something, I think? Your words?
We're hoping... Well, we put up a memorial bench, and the plaque on it says, remembering the first people who fought for their country. Mm. And that covers the overseas ones and the first...
First Nations people here.
First Nations people conflicts, yeah. So that's because you don't want to offend the Anzac Day people.
That's
you don't want to mark... You just want to broaden it a bit, you
respect,
know?
Respect for all, yes, respect
yeah,
for all.
That's right.
Les,
and
sorry.
Right. Some of the people who were there, there hasn't ever before been an Aboriginal acknowledgement at Anzac Day on Bradram, but on Friday, Les and Meredith, you know, laid a wreath for sales on behalf of the first people who fought overseas. And a couple of the people who are there, or a few of the people there, are interested in walking actually in the parade next year for first people service, you know, for the servicemen from the First Nations, which would be great if we get permission to do that.
For sure.
And then a whole lot of us will walk in support, you know,
yep.
And that will raise the awareness in the general community, and then we'll just have a bit of a party at the greenhouse afterwards or something
right.
like that.
Yeah. There's most First Nations families in this country, I feel, have a member of their family engaged in services, being a member of the armed forces at some stage in somewhere in our family line. Is that the case for yourself, Les?
Yeah, brother. I've had two of my cousins who fought and survived in the Vietnam conflict. Had one uncle who fought in the Second World War. My own father-in-law, he fought on the Kokoda Trail, you know. And then we have people like my father, Arthur Muckin, and his brother, Danny Muckin, who were rounded up by the Yankee army, you know, when they were out here, to drive their supply trucks from the coastline inland, to get away, you know, so the Japs... couldn't find their camp so easy, you know, and they were rounded up and my father, you know, before he passed away in 2001 there, he always said that he thought that he was enrolled, you know, in the armies to service his country, you know, and yet the Yankees and the Australian governments never, ever recognised their bravery to country for driving those Yankee trucks.
Right, so you've brought in another aspect of this now, and that is those like your dad who thought that they were enlisted in the army were not officially, they were just civilians that were truck drivers.
Just chucked into a job.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, chucked into a job.
The Yankees didn't want their soldiers being shot out or, you know, killed in behind lines, in Australia lines, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's another aspect that
there's another aspect
of it, you know?
That's right.
Yeah,
now,
how many other family groups, how many other brothers and sisters?
How many other of our mob
served
served a role in this way, yeah, for sure.
Exactly.
Now, you you participated in the march, the official Anzac march, recognising like representing your mob.
Yeah, no, I didn't.
Les laid a wreath.
Sorry?
Les laid a wreath. Well, Les,
I didn't march. I just laid a wreath. I was asked by Meredith and Heather there to lay a wreath, and I was blessed. I was honoured to do that, Tiger. Because now that I sit back and think about it, you know, we were told that, you know, they weren't going to mention the Indigenous soldiers, you know, returning. And but the actual MC announced it, that we were laying the wreath for that very purpose. And when I got up to walk forward with Meredith to lay the wreath, those people that were sitting on the platform actually said to us later, you know, that you brought a tear to our eye, you know, when you brought the wreath up the lake. Now, when we got up, we can hear different people, and I took no notice of it, but you can hear different people say, well, this is new.
Yeah.
Yes, it is new. You know, we're bringing it to the forefront, brother. You know, this is ice-breaking stuff.
And how do you feel being involved and engaging in this where... It's recognition for their mob, but it's bringing that to the fore for mainstream Australians as well. And it's black fella, white fella working together and showing respect and spreading this awareness and the respect. How do you feel being involved in that?
Well, mate, we're not just saying words, you know, about the spirit of reconciliation. We're actually doing it.
Yeah.
You know? And this is what needs to be brought. And in the afternoon session, when I had an opportunity to speak there, you know, and spoke about my great grandmother and her children, you know, were taken away when they went to get the children from the school, you know, and it's just across the road, you know, from the school, and they were part of the stolen generation. They were taken away, never to be returned. Now, you know, when I had the opportunity to talk about that laying of the wreath. I look at it today as it wasn't just for the mums, dads, uncles, aunties, brothers and sisters who fought in the conflicts overseas, but those who fought the conflict here in Australia as well. You know, our forefathers and our mothers, you know, they paid the ultimate sacrifice, you know, in fighting for their tribal grounds or their tribal countries.
That's right.
You know, as I think about it today, and I thought, now I feel honoured because I laid that wreath. That wreath was done up, and I thank the ladies, Meredith, and Heather, thank you very, very much for doing up that wreath, because that wreath, Tiger, was done up in bush trees and branches and leaves.
Good one.
And in our colour, in our Aboriginal colours. You know, and that's why the people acknowledged it when they said, oh, this is new.
Yeah.
You know? So it's bringing it in the forefront of things, brother.
Yeah, no, it's certainly fantastic. That
there's going to be more of it. You know, this is only just the beginning of it.
Exactly. No, that's great. And it's good to see you're enthusiastic and supportive of it. I just want to read something. I got an email today, and it's about General Cosgrove. Governor General Peter Cosgrove paid a visit to the Australian Institute of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Studies. And on that visit, they say he saw a photo of the 4th contingent of the Queensland Imperial Bushmen on their return from the Boer War in August 1901. It's a rare piece in its own right. But in the middle of that photo is a First Nations man, an Aboriginal soldier, seen clearly. And there's not a lot of information, as they say, this is a rare photo, and there's not a lot of information about our people, Les, fighting in the Boer War. And I just thought I'd bring that add that in. Due to the push by First Nations people to have the black diggers, as they're called, recognised and represented in the Anzac marches, and now the push by people like Meredith and Heather and Henry Reynolds and people right across the board are pushing for the recognition of the first, the Forgotten War, where our people fought and died for their tribal lands, their country. I just think
that's what's going to happen. That's what counts. You know,
who researched into how many fought in the Light Horsemen, you know, with Jerusalem and them places, you know? There's a few hundred people of our people that fought in that. See, it's not being recognised. When you talk to the RSL people, committees, they just say, oh, well, they talk about the return diggers, you know?
That's right.
But there's nothing that separates the traditional owners or the original inhabitants of Australia, right, of this land, who went overseas. Because you've got to remember, we weren't acknowledged or acknowledged as First Nation people until 1967. That's so our people who fought in the 1940s and before that, you know, in the Vietnam War, you know, it was very hard for them to go and fight, but they did it because they were serving their country.
That's right. And on return, they didn't get the benefits that they weren't flowing onto blackfellas. It was only for the whitefellas that served. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that makes it hard. But that's why you wonder. You know, when I say this to non-Indigenous people, you know, they say to me, "Oh, but you know, Kevin Rudd said sorry." Have a look at the word. He said sorry to the stolen generation. Thank God he did, you know. But let's go one step further. In the spirit of reconciliation, let's say sorry to the Aboriginal people who have lost their forefathers and mothers in the conflicts of serving their traditional country and grounds.
Meredith, that's an interesting point, the apology. You've got, you think there's more to...
Oh, definitely.
Yeah?
Oh, definitely. I think that...
Probably, sir.
We do need to acknowledge, or the non-Indigenous people need to acknowledge, that they stole the land. And you know, I see myself and other non-Indigenous people as the beneficiaries of some very dreadful events, so dreadful that one can hardly read the books about it. And my interest is in making those histories, which are so well written and researched now, much better research than they were a few years ago, but the work of Henry Reynolds and Tim Bottoms here in Queensland and Patrick Collins, a whole lot of others. Their books are hard to read. They're a bit impenetrable. I find them a bit impenetrable, and we need to translate that information, that knowledge, into a more absorbable medium and accept it. I think that non-Indigenous people need to accept that we are living in a wonderful place at the expense of very many people.
Yeah, yeah.
Thousands of people died. The same order of numbers, Indigenous people died in the frontier wars as died in other conflicts, big conflicts.
Heather, you've got an interesting perspective on land ownership.
Oh, yes.
You shouldn't own land.
I think, I don't think you own land. I think land really owns you in a way, and I think we're at best custodians because we come and go and the land is there, you know. And it is my practice for the land of which I'm the custodian to formally say this land was stolen from the Aboriginal people, to have that in my mind, you know, to say it to anyone who wants to hear, and to remember and I research and try to remember the history or know what I can about the history of the place and the location. And I feel a bit the same way about places where my ancestors have lived. Do you know that I have a connection to them, like the Darling Downs? So I go there and say sorries or whatever it is about the research that whole conflict and visit massacre sites and native police stations, that sort of stuff, and say sorries. And I think it's important to mind your own business, which is what I try to do, which is look after the land of which I'm the custodian and attend to my family's history as best I can. And I think that the healing of the land is that sort of a thing, really, and involves a ongoing commitment. So that's my... But it's just my opinion, you know.
Yeah, no, I think it's great.
My perspective.
Tiger?
Yes,
can I
Liz.
Just jump in on that, Heather? You know, the Bible, you know, it speaks about healing of the, you know, healing in general, right?
It speaks about the blood on the land crying out.
Exactly.
It speaks about healing the land. And I...
Yes, exactly.
And the thing is that the basic things are important.
You, and the thing is that you, I, you know, and our people come from the land. You know, we were born, birthed out of the earth, because the Bible speaks about we came out of the miry clay. So we come out of the land, right? So when you talk about healing the land, you're talking about healing the people.
That's it. With sick country, we got sick people. And if there are people like Heather and people working on healing the land, eventually people get well as a result of it.
Yeah, and that's the way we're going to do it. That's how Aboriginal people live. They lived off the land.
Yeah.
You know? And now we can't do that because the laws or the bylaws that were brought in by governments, you know, the Constitution. Constitution was, I believe, was based on the biblical stance, you know? So if we're going to go back into that, well, then let's get the thing right from the beginning. You look at the amount of boat people or amount of people that were being brought out here because of the conflicts that were happening in their own country, and they were looked after. You know, they were given a gold spoon treatment. What about the First Nation people? You know, that had conflict since the non-Indigenous people came to this country, the first settlement way back in Sydney.
Well, I don't like the way they're looking after the boat people these days.
Oh, no.
Children behind razor wire and stuff like that.
I'm just making a point of it, you know?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, then. Well, let's get back to the First Nation people first.
Yeah, that's right. No worries there. Heather, some of the history... You do research, and I think that's great that you mentioned do research and know the land that you're on. That's important for settler society, is it? Is it not?
Oh, it's absolutely important. And the history, you know, in the 1800s, everyone knew that there was a war happening, but in the 1900s, in the 20th century, we were all taught at school that Australia was peacefully settled. You know, and there's a lot of people still believe that. And it's a culture of denial, and that's not easily challenged. But now there is such, as Meredith said, such substantial historical research that it's really a matter of bringing it to people's attention, really.
Tell us about some of the history where you are at Butterham. Murdering Creek Road is just down the road. Massacre site?
Well, that's a little way away.
Is it right?
From me, but okay. It's up near Noosa, but it's the best known local massacre. There were many massacres in this area. Like there was an organised resistance here, and Aboriginals were shot on sight or poisoned, flower poisoned, that sort of thing. But none of that. Most of those stories aren't recorded because, you know, people cover them up. But there was a creek called Murdering Creek, and there was a road called Murdering Creek Road, and so that has stayed in the public consciousness, I suppose. And it's not been there was no very good information about it, and people would research it and say, oh, maybe it happened and maybe it didn't, that sort of thing. But in fact, a historian that we work with, Ray Kirkhove, found a letter in the archives just last year written by an early settler, which gave chapter and verse, you know, of some of the detail of that, naming people who were involved and so on, which is really very important because that makes it true. And Meredith has done a lot of research on that, like contacting people named, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of people up that way talk about Murdering Creek and feel that their area is troubled by that history.
Really?
You know,
yeah.
People often say that. And I've been told that quite often, but because it's not near Budrum, you know, it's a long way away.
Yeah, we'll get Meredith to tell us more about that one. But before we do, the name Murdering Creek Road, is there's been discussion over a number of years, particularly from First Nations perspective, that some of these are negative and shouldn't be and should be changed, name changes. But in this particular case, like Murdering Creek, where there was a massacre, Meredith,
Do you think there should be a name change, or does it help to prick the consciousness of settler society? How do you feel, Heather? And then we'll get Meredith to tell us a little bit.
Oh,
should we be looking at name changes? Leave it.
Yeah. Raises awareness, and it gives you the opportunity to tell the story. And so there's two schools in that area that are now asking the local Indigenous people to come and tell them about it, or help them respond appropriately to it. So, and that's just a great opportunity, you know.
Yeah, it is.
And I think it's very important until everybody knows. Well, they may know. I think it should stay for the sake of consciousness raising.
What are your thoughts, Meredith?
Oh, I agree. And there are a few creeks, murdering creeks in Australia. This isn't the only one.
Right.
I've been trying to work out when it was first named that on a map, and I have a suspicion that the person who wrote the letter that Ray found in the Royal Historical Society of Queensland, I have a suspicion that he might have been behind the naming. He did at some stage in the 1920s. He did own the block that adjoins Murdering Creek, and maybe he instigated it. Maybe it was commonly called that by everyone. But, yes, no, it's very important. I do understand that people in Murdering Creek Road have applied informally, I think, to have the name changed, but the Geographical Names Board wouldn't do that. I think there might be some circumstances where, and I can think of one in Mandandangi country around Roma, where there's a name that might be changed, but I think in that process of changing, if there was to be one, you'd need to make sure that the story was known and kept in some other way. But I'm all for keeping it. And what we need now, and what I hope will happen sometime in the future, is to have the story better known. The letter isn't... The account in the letter is partially accurate. We've checked out the names of Ray Kirkhove, and I checked out the names mentioned. Some of the people were there then, and some of them were not, and I'm keen to, and am speaking to descendants of some of the people who are mentioned, because they may know some story, they may have got some oral history handed down, but also it's important for them to understand it before anything's made public, so that they can wholeheartedly embrace it, and that's what's happening. The family, one of the families, and at some time when I guess I... and Ray and Heather, we feel better about it. It's tempting to tell the story as it is in the letter, or we tell the story the same way, but not mention the people. It's tempting to mention them, but, you see, this isn't about blame. It's about understanding the truth and telling truthful history. And when we're more certain about what that truth might be, and when we've spoken to more of the descendants, that'll be the time when they can wholeheartedly embrace it in the same way that, a little like the Mile Creek Massacre, where local Indigenous people and descendants of settlers and the local community celebrated or commemorated the event together. A wonderful example.
And even established a relationship there.
Oh, yes, it's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what people want.
Yes.
Sorry to bother
you. You're right, Heather, yep.
It's really important. Like, I'm only here from 1946, that's recent, and I can research the history and tell the stories. But I think, finally, it is really important. What I would hope to do is create a space where the Aboriginal people can tell their story, and where the descendants of the white settlers can tell their story safely, and that's when there will be real reconciliation and healing of the land. I think it needs the participation of both those groups. And on Friday, one of the people telling stories was descended from a first settler in this area, and I think that it's very hard for those guys to do that, but it is important, and when that happens, you really break through to another level of healing.
So, in other words, you're trying to recognise frontier wars in a way that's not offensive to mainstream or the supporters of ANZAC and stuff, and have that respect across the board.
Oh, well, You can't help offending people sometimes. No, I'm committed to truth-telling.
Yes.
And if the truth is offensive, well, it is, you know? Like even Les said to me, oh, do you think this story about the stolen children is a bit confronting,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
upsetting to people? Yes, it is. Yeah. But there is a time when you don't have to do it angrily, but the truth needs to be told and needs to be known. And I don't go out of my way to offend people, but I don't mind if they're offended, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, you can't help that. I mean, like you say, the truth must be told.
Yeah, it must be.
Now,
and when you can get a place where the black fella and the white settler descendants can tell the truth together in the same space, that's when you're really cooking with gas.
That's when you're cooking with gas, all right. So what are your plans for next year?
Well,
or from here on in? You might have something planned for later this year even.
We hope that there will be a large contingent of people, including some Aboriginal people. Well, Les is going to march in the Budrum Parade, in the Anzac Day Parade.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We have to get the Anzac Day Committee's permission.
So you're working on that to have a black contingent there, Les, then?
Yeah.
Yeah, bro.
People have already said they will. And I think if elders like Les and Don Fuquandi march, then the other guys will march as well.
Right.
We'll work on that all year. Yeah. And then we'll have a bit of a celebration afterwards at the greenhouse. But we're thinking, I do think that, you know, we need an apology. We need an apology for the Frontier Wars or an acknowledgement of the Frontier Wars. And we're planning on that Kevin Rudd Sorry Day, you know, the 13th of February, to have a gathering at the greenhouse for that, talking about that. Mm. And we'll invite the police, you know, see if we can get some of those big wheels along.
You might have someone turn up, yes, you might.
I must say that the Anglican Church has supported this process very actively, and on Friday there was a bishop there and a priest, quite a few, a few clergy anyway, and so they, both in principle and in practice, supportive, and I think, pretty sure that we will have senior clergy there anyway. But I would imagine that some of the politicians will come as well when we tell them we've had, you know, the size of this year's gathering. You just want to work on it, you know, and see where that's the idea.
What are your thoughts, Meredith?
Oh, well, I agree.
The next year. You got some other things you're working on?
Oh, no, I was very keen. I thought that my experience of laying the wreath with Les and being at the main service, Les and I didn't go to the dawn service, but we went to the main service, and being there and respectfully thinking about all those things, and then in the afternoon getting on a different subject with the Frontier Wars and Dispossession, I found it emotionally draining, or for all the joy that was associated with it. And I also feel that I can see, looking at the crowd that we had, that perhaps it's too confronting or too much in the day for people to turn up at two events, and that getting the wholehearted engagement of the non-Indigenous population requires a day of its own. It's just that there isn't actually an obvious day, but I think we started in the right place, acknowledging that it was a war on Anzac Day, and now we'll, if Sorry Day, I think, is probably a better one, and it's not that far away from Australia Day that one can make a sort of respectful point about that. But in relation to Anzac Day, I think with our event at the greenhouse next year, we should be reading and looking at some of those very interesting stories that are coming on the Indigenous networks that I get emails from, I've met a fellow in the Defence Forces, Beau Beckman, who's the Indigenous coordinator, he's collecting stories. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. This oral history is what will tell us which Indigenous families were involved in the military conflicts. That's how we're finding it out, because the families are saying, well, my family was there, because you can't tell from the records.
Mm-hmm.
And there aren't that many photos. So, I mean, it's a wonderful bit of discovery. So goodness knows what we'll know by next year about more stories about Indigenous service men and women in the war, in the wars.
Heather, let me ask you. I remember during our discussion yesterday afternoon, there was reference to a mention of the culture of Anzac Day in Australia Day, in this country today. What are your thoughts?
Well, I suppose I'm committed to broadening participation in both. So on Australia Day, we have a celebration of culture, you know, a couple of days before, because, yes, anyway, it's very important.
For me, I'm finding it a bit confronting as a First Nations person to observe what takes place, the attitude within settler society in recognising Australia Day and Anzac Day. It's almost a yobboism, a nationalism, a redneck type thing.
And Anzac Day can be like that too, particularly in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And I'm really committed to both occasions being inclusive and particularly appropriately acknowledging Australia's First People. So we have a specific gathering in relation to Australia Day and Anzac Day, and and it's just really raising awareness within the white community. Yes, otherwise you couldn't go to them,
That's right. Otherwise you couldn't go to them. How do you feel, Meredith?
Solidarity with your First People friends.
Yes.
Oh, well, I agree, but then I come from an inner city culture of Sydney where we all go along to the Indigenous events. I mean, that's our place.
We didn't have Indigenous events till we started them a couple of years ago.
Yes, you must be congratulated for that.
And it's just doing what's necessary,
Yeah.
Yes, I think that there is the success or the truthfulness of the celebratory history is only as good as the recognition of the unhappy aspects of the past. There's no good in, I think, just being laudatory towards oneself or for pioneers if you're not telling the other parts of the story. And that's a bit difficult. And we've got politicians, governments who somehow feel that people need to be praised all the time, and that's not so. And we've got a lot of young people coming along. We've got lots of children who need to know these stories, and it's very good that the new curricula, young people now probably, people under 20 or so probably know more about the settling of Australia, more truthful things about the settling of Australia, certainly than people like myself. And, I've had 40 years as a heritage practitioner and I have a long consciousness of these things. But there are many avenues in which people can learn things.
Mm-hmm. Now, how can people contact you, Heather, Meredith? I mean, do you want to promote? People might be listening and want to engage, want to be involved, want to replicate something that you're doing in their own area.
Well, Lord, I have an email address, and people can email me on it.
Good. Tell us what it is.
It's Heather, H-E-A-T-H-E-R, Heather, B for boy, J for John, heatherbj@gmail.com.
Good.
Anyone can email me.
Good. Yep. No, that'd be great if people want to. Well, ladies, we're getting close to, and Les, we're getting close to news time.
Thanks, Mark.
It's been great to have you guys join me today have this discussion. I just think it's fantastic. And again, I must congratulate Heather and Meredith for the work you guys are doing. I mean, it's just so badly needed.
We get a lot of support.
Yes, that's important. That's important.
Yeah, just a bit of flack.
A little bit of flack. Of course, I've got a saying that if you're not stepping on anyone's toes, you're not doing the job right.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
But, ladies, we're going to be talking again some more. I'd like to be able to promote anything and interview you guys with anything that you're doing up there. Don't hesitate to utilise the services that we have here.
Okay, splendid. Thank you very much. It's great.
Thank you very much, Heather. And, Les, thanks a lot, brother, for joining us today.
No problem, brother. Anytime, mate.
Righto, brother.
Thanks, Tiger.
Right. Have a good day. Okay. Yeah. And Meredith, it's great to have you in the studio. When I spoke to you yesterday, you were heading to Moolumbah. You were going to be down in Moolumbah as we're speaking now today, this time.
Yeah.
You've changed your mind and said, look, I want you to come in. I'd like you to join me on air if you can't do it live, do it on the telephone.
I'm very honoured. And
you've decided to stay overnight in Brisbane?
Oh, I did last night, yeah, and yeah. Tonight I'll be in Lismore. I'm looking at the Lismore Museum, which has a very good display, I believe, about early settler history, and so I'm wanting to see that and to see whether that's something that could be emulated by other museums. We could get the stories told more accurately now that the information's readily available.
Very good. And listen, congratulations again on the work that you're doing, and let's hope you've got many more projects like these ahead of you. And we'd certainly like to be involved with you, help promote at least. It's the least we can do.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining me today.